Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Mutt-tropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Step onto the sexy streets of animal attraction that is New York City. Welcome to Pets in the City, Life in the Urban Jungle. Join host Diane West as she explores the exciting lives, loves, and laments of the people and pets in the world's greatest city. Pets in the City, like the city itself, has something for everyone. Celebrity pet sightings, pet events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So get ready to get dressed to the canines and take a bite out of the Big Apple with your Pets in the City host, Diane West.
Hello, all you cyber cats, kittens, canines, and critters under all creation. This is Diane West coming at you once again from the greatest city in the world, and of course that would be New York City, with Pets in the City on Pet Life Radio. Can you believe the band that brought us rock classics like Aqualung, Cross-Eyed Mary, Locomotive Breath, and I could go on and on, have been together for over 40 years? Of course, I'm talking about Jethro Tull, and we are so excited to have Ian Anderson, the eccentric, flute-playing, hard-rocking founder of the band, here with us today on Pet Life Radio. And while many of our listeners may know his songs by heart, what they may not know is this musical pioneer is absolutely obsessed with cats. We'll be right back to talk about that and more.
All right, this is my stop, Commercial Boulevard. Yeah, that's funny. Pets in the City will be back in a New York minute. Don't go anywhere.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in four unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, all you yuppie puppies and city kitties, Pets in the City is back with more urban animals and cool cosmopolitan critters. Try saying that three times fast. Right, Diane?
On his hands and knees, old Charlie stole the handle, and the train then won't stop going, no way to slow down.
It's
41 years since Jethro Tull began. That was back in 1968 in the early part of the year. And since then, of course, there have been many changes in the band lineup and many changes in our musical styles. And although we go back and revisit some of those early days in the music that we feature in a set list from time to time from the very first albums of Jethro Tull, it has evolved a great deal over the years. And of course, the common link is me, the unplugged guy in a rock band. There have been many great musicians pass through the band over the years, all of them bringing their distinctive contributions to our style.
Now, from what I understand, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the seminal events for you guys was the 1971 Isle of Wight performance, which sometimes is called the British Woodstock. Would you really describe it as that?
I wouldn't, for kind of sociological reasons. The Woodstock event was primarily a free festival, a festival of love and peace and mud and sex and drugs, where I don't think an awful lot of people, you know, came to a sticky end or were violently abused. However, the Isle of Wight festival, a mere 2 years later, was a completely different kettle of rather stinking fish. It was the end of the era of the hippie love and peace period, and it was well, you know, it was distinctly unpleasant. I mean, it was a paid ticket. There were a lot of anarchic people who insisted that it should be free and that they should be allowed in spite of the fact that ticket holders had, you know, paid good money and queued up to get in. That there was a great deal of violence outside and then inside the venue. It was really actually deeply unpleasant. But from a bystander's point of view, really very interesting, because it was the end of an era and the beginnings, I think, of a harder edge reality that some years later morphed into Thatcherism and a much more pragmatic view about what you took from life and how you paid for it and your obligations. So I think it was quite a watershed period, and one that it was interesting to be at. But from a musical perspective and from a performance perspective, it was trial and tribulation all the way for all the bands who played there, including poor Jimi Hendrix, for whom it was his last major concert, and he didn't have a good time that night, and the audience were not very kind to him. So it was interesting, but you can't compare the two festivals at all. Really quite different, I think.
Wow. No, so, I mean, really, as you say, it sounds like it was kind of like a pivotal, almost closing of an era of the, you know, peace, love, and hippie kind of vibe going on there. Wow. Cool.
Absolutely. Well, you can see all of this if you go out and check out the video of the film that was made back then by Murray Lerner, the Isle of Wight Festival, and that shows it's as nail-biting as Spinal Tap or the story of Anvil when it comes to seeing the underbelly of rock and roll. Check out Murray Lerner's movie. It's still available, and I'm sure on DVD, and it's really worth watching. Amusing and tragic in equal parts.
Ian, I'm telling you, I'm going to have to check that out just because I have never heard anyone describe Spinal Tap as nail-biting in my life, so see it just on that description. Now, speaking of, you know, pouring out your emotions and just kind of angst and comedic at the same time, you strike me as someone who was not afraid to really put your emotions out there. I mean, you really seem like you pour a lot of your thought and theology and philosophy into your lyrics. Now, of course, one of your most famous albums, Aqualung, from what I understand, were you going through a hard time. I think your dad was ill, and I hear a lot of anger and angst on those songs. What is that kind of like a correct assessment? Was it like a catharsis for you?
It would have been if I'd written it about 5 years earlier, but, you know, a lot of the emotions, a lot of the background to the songs comes from periods in my life preceding the actual writing and recording and release of the album. So, you know, when you're making music, you aren't necessarily just singing about what happened to you this morning when you're pushing a trolley around the supermarket. You could be singing about something that happened in your school days or something that happened, you know, last year or the year before. I mean, you draw upon life's experiences when you write stuff. And I'm sure when Shakespeare wrote Hamlet, he wasn't necessarily, at that particular moment, dealing with thoughts that were pertinent to his surroundings and his activities at that time. He was drawing upon lots of elements of probably half-remembered history and a lot of emotional and dramatic range that is part of his expertise. But you know, people who write music or literature or make movies, or paint pictures, you know, they are drawing upon a plethora of confusion, really. It's all the mixed emotions that you have in your life, and it's like a chef going into a kitchen with and opening the cupboards, and it's full of herbs and spices and interesting things, and you know, you can pick and choose and make something of all of that without necessarily it being just about one thing, you know. So as a songwriter, it's a good idea to stray from the world of meat and potatoes and get a little bit more interesting with the delicacies and the flavors that you add to the stew.
And I know you're an Indian food lover, so you love your spices.
Well, that's right. I think they go a long way, especially they go a long way in replacing the high level of sodium in our diet. You can make food flavorful and interesting without pouring on salt. You know, all the saturated fats for that matter, but well, that takes us into dangerous territory, because unfortunately most Indian cooking, whether it's the relatively fast food cooking of many restaurants or even home Indian cooking, it does not have a reputation of being particularly healthy, but that's just mostly to do with the fact that everything is heavily oiled, a lot of carbohydrates and a lot of industrial oils, and even ghee, the clarified butter used in cooking, which is, I mean, really high in saturated fat, very, you know, really, really not good for you at all. But of course, no reason why you make really great tasting Indian food and just substitute extra virgin olive oil for your industrial cooking oils and come up with something which is lightly sauteed and nicely nicely healthy for you, since a lot of Indian food is heavy on the vegetables and light on the red meats.
Well, you know, I tell you, just the as you're describing, you know, putting together all the different parts, light on the meat, heavy on the vegetables, you know, again, just to go back to some of your lyric writing, I must say some of it is the most, I guess, interesting flavored that, to take the cooking analogy, that a lot of people have heard of. And I have to tell you, you were the source of great debate for my friends and I, especially in Aqualung, the part where you're singing choking out pieces of his broken luck. For years, we were arguing with each other if you were saying luck or lung. So it was one of those rock and roll things that we were kind of debating.
You could blame my atrocious diction, or you could blame the limitations of recording and mixing onto vinyl. either way, I can only apologize that you spent so long in the period of dark dilemma.
We took you very seriously.
Well, I take me very seriously, too, when it comes to trying to use words in a way which is definitive and carefully thought through. You know, you have ideas and they're very fluffy and very emotional, and sometimes certain words fly off the page, actually, when you're writing something. But you really have to go back and give it a second and a third and a fourth look to make sure that it wouldn't benefit from a little editing, a little reconstruction. So I think it's a mixture of emotional outpouring and very disciplined writing and obeying certain rules, which I think are applicable even in the lowly world of rock lyrics. That's just my view.
And Ian, you've been someone in the business, you know, again, for 40, 41 years. So, you know, you said something interesting. You really saw the technology kind of change as well. So, I mean, is it kind of just interesting for you to think back about your early days and now realize that you're on CGI on Rock Band 2 video game?
Well, technology has changed a lot, but you know, the noises we make are still driven by, I say the noises we make, we musicians, you know, whether we're playing instruments of the classical Western orchestra, whether we're playing the instruments of contemporary pop and rock music, they haven't really changed very much in the case of orchestral instruments, violins, for example. You know, in 400 years, not a lot changed. In the case of electric guitars, it's certainly little has changed in the last 50 years. The classic the two classic electric guitars, the Gibson Les Paul and the Fender Stratocaster, still essentially are the definitive two guitars today. Pretty much everything else is, you can definitely trace its lineage to one or other of those instruments.
And acoustics are acoustics and flutes are flutes?
Well, to a large extent. I mean, flute technology is always developing some tiny, tiny changes to the instrument, but basically the instrument is as it was when it was, the current orchestral flute was essentially developed by Boehm, and it's an instrument that is almost unchanged fundamentally to this day. So, you know, technology, sure, in the way that people listen to music and the way they make music, but the actual way that we play and perform music, it's pretty basic. And even when you look at sampling and sequencing and computers in music, it's happened around about 82-83. So, you know, we're looking at 25 years since the technology of sampling and sequencing and computers, since that began. It's, of course, it's got more sophisticated. It's essentially the same, and I think we saw probably by the end of the 80s, you know, we were, music, I don't think, has changed a huge amount since then. Same 12 notes.
We cannot talk about the end of the 80s with your Grammy award-winning Crest of an Ave win on the Grammys against Metallica's Justice for All. I honestly, we were sitting in front of the television when we were all, you know, young metalheads, and we were like, yeah, this is great, this is the first time is heavy metal. And then they said Jethro Tull. We love you to death, but gotta say, was very shocked over that. Were you just as shocked?
No, well, I wasn't sitting in front of a television. I was busy earning a living working in a recording studio that day. So we had a phone call later that evening to say that we had won the Grammy, and that you know, which was perfectly nice, but we knew that it had courted a deal of controversy. But frankly, you know, Jethro Tull to be nominated in the category in the first place, one of five or six bands nominated in that category of best hard rock oblique stroke metal act, and it was the first year that new category was in operation at the Grammys, to be nominated in it didn't seem to cause a stir at all, largely because no one thought we were going to win it, so no one got their knickers in a twist. But of course, when we did win it, a lot of people in very bad grace, you know, got rather voluble about it. So it's probably just as well that I haven't been invited, because if I had, I think I might have had a thing or two to say about it, very much in public. But the people who really lost out, of course, were Metallica, who everybody thought was going to win the Grammy, and they were the ones who actually, with some dignity, held their heads up, and when, as I suggested at the time, they probably would win the Grammy the following year, and indeed they did. They took out an advertisement and billboard thanking their producers, their engineer, their road crew, their mums, their dads, the uncles, the family dog, and thanking Jethro Tull for not bringing out a new album that year. So,
but you took out an ad of your own saying that the flute is a heavy metal instrument, right?
Well, I didn't take it out. I was taken out by the record company. But I think it was a good idea, but not. You know, I think they just said the flute is a metal instrument with a picture of a flute. So it was a little tongue-in-cheek jibe on the part of Chrysalis Records. However,
it sounds like you and the Metallica boys were kind of, you know, took it in stride, and everyone else was kind of having a big dust-up about it. Is that what was happening there?
I think that's what was happening there, yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break and be right back and switch gears a little bit from Ian's love of rock and roll to Cats. Stay put and hear about this one.
Sitting on the park bench, eyeing little girls with bad intent. Snot running down his nose, greasy fingers smearing shabby clothes. Hey, Aqualung, drying in the cold.
This is a Pelham Bay local train.
All right, this is my stop, Commercial Boulevard. Yeah, that's funny. Pets in the City will be back in a New York minute. Don't go anywhere.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
Hey, what do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's fine.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, all you yuppie puppies and city kitties. Pets in the City is back with more urban animals and cool cosmopolitan critters. Try saying that three times fast. Right, Diane?
Ian, you love cats.
I love both the idea of cats, the history of cats in society, the cats in the wild, particularly the 26 species of small wild cat. Some might argue one more or less, depending on their viewpoint, but roughly speaking, there are about 26 species of small wild cats, and they're the ones that tend not to get written about or noticed, partly because they're not big and scary, and they don't bite the heads off Roy. So, you know, the small wild cats get a bit of a raw deal, and many of them are truly endangered species and do deserve, at this stage, some real intervention on the part of environmentalists, scientists, and governments to try and give the protection to those species where they really do need it. So, yes, I'm a champion of the small cats and, of course, domestic cats. So really pretty much all descended from Felis libica, the wild cat of Africa, of northern Africa, which spread out across into northern Europe, and in most of northern Europe is called Felis silvestris, a big sort of, kind of big, rugged, quite long-haired, chabby-looking cat. And, of course, in Scotland, Scottish wild cat, known, perhaps incorrectly, but interestingly, as Felis silvestris grampia, to set it aside from its European neighbour, is very much one of those endangered species, and about which we in the UK seem to be paralysed into doing nothing at all to save.
Why are they endangered, though, Ian? Are people killing them, overbreeding them? What's happening?
Well, what happened to the Scottish wildcat, really, in the Victorian times, when the Scottish Highlands were suddenly populated not by native species, but by an unwelcome incomer from the south in the form of sheep, because Scottish Highlands were a big wilderness area where it was possible to acquire large tracts of land very cheaply and put flocks of sheep on for the summer and then take them south for fattening in the winter. It was, I suppose, the sheep and then the sporting value of those estates, primarily for grass shooting, meant that the gamekeepers and the landowners persecuted the Scottish wildcat, which would attack newborn lambs and, of course, attack grouse as a prey. So gamekeepers would shoot on sight anything that's remotely feline crawling about in the moors and the heather of Scotland. So it was severely depleted for that reason, but also as the human population encroached further into wilderness Scotland, domestic cats would then breed with their wild cousin, and so the genetic purity of Felis silvestris has been severely compromised. And even to this day, I suppose, but there are those who will maintain there are still, you know, a small population of true wild cats around. Many more pragmatic and cynical folks believe that there may well be little or no genetically pure Scottish wildcat left, that has all been genetically diluted by interbreeding with Felis catus, the domestic cat. So
wow.
somewhere between those two views the truth lies, but if there's any chance of saving Scottish wildcat, it has to be very soon, otherwise there really won't be any left.
Now, you've had a lot of cats come in and out of your life. I believe you live on a farm, right? So you have a lot of domestic cats and cats that kind of walked in on your doorstep. And of course, you have Rupi, who is the subject of actually one of your songs on your solo album.
Yeah, well, she was a feral. We've always had a few feral cats in our cat population at home since my wife and I got married 33 years ago. She's prompting me from across the room. And, you know, the ferals, when you live on a farm or out in the rural countryside, there are cats that do, you know, interbreed and roam, and kittens are born in the back of dark and...
Feral cats are obviously a delight to be able to save and rear and hopefully find good homes for, but of course it is a big commitment. They're not usually very approachable until they're maybe been with you for 3 or 4 weeks, and hopefully they're then hand tame and reasonably reliable to pick up and handle and ultimately pass on to a good home. But it does require a lot of very serious and disciplined effort to give them a good start in life, and if possible catching up the mother is always a good idea, to have her spayed, because in rare occasions it might be desirable to have a feral mum bringing up or producing more kittens to keep rats and other rodents down in rural communities or in barns. But mostly it's really better to have them spayed and try and reduce that sad incidence of small kittens being born only to die days or weeks later.
Now, you said, obviously, you know, and your point is well taken, you really need to know how to take care of cats, feral and otherwise. On your website, I see that somebody took a big chunk out of your finger, but you didn't say who.
Oh, well, that was just an accident, putting a cat out in the middle of the night in the dark and accidentally making a grab for a cat that decided to run back, you know, back up the stairs, and I drove my fingers into the stairs behind me in my attempt to get hold of it, forgetting I was standing on stairs at the time, and so I broke a finger and damaged another one. But that's life. And a few weeks later, when we were medicating a cat that had had a serious eye injury, and I was kneeling on the floor, bending over to put some special eye drops in the cat's eye, and I just got at an awkward angle and managed to severely pull some muscles in my back. So I spent a few days with a serious back injury as a result of a cat again. That's my second cat injury in a period of 3 months. But hopefully the cats and I are all much more careful with each other as a result, and so we'll try not to make it three in a row.
And that's true, because you are constantly touring around Europe, and from what I understand, much to the United States' delight, you're actually, I believe, coming back to the colonies very soon, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we have two tours planned in October and November, and a bunch of dates on the West Coast, including the Beacon Theatre in New York, which I think comes up.
That's
somewhere.
October 13th, right?
Oh, well done, yes, that's the one.
October 13th at the Beacon, everyone.
Yeah, there you go. And essentially that is a tour, or two tours, as indeed all the tours from the second week of September onwards are actually not Jethro Tull rock band shows. There Ian Anderson plays the acoustic Jethro Tull shows. So I'm primarily doing acoustic music, some of the classic acoustic songs from Jethro Tull, plus some of the rock songs done in a more acoustic fashion, as well as quite a bit of new material which has been specially written. And some of the new material has actually been performed already, but not in the UK or the USA. So it's a good opportunity to blend a little new music with a chunk of the old stuff that our fans will recognize from the acoustic side of our work, as well as hearing a few of the rock classics done up in a different suit of clothes.
Well, you know, I don't know if you're going to be having shows that night, but you just happen to be in New York that week, that on October 17th and 18th, there's going to be a Meet the Breeds show where there's going to be a cat show and a dog show at the same time. So if you want to stop by there.
I have to be on my travels. You see, I'm concerts pretty much every night, and so we don't have really much time to do anything other than travel, do a sound check, do a show, get some sleep, and travel again. So it's pretty hectic. See, if I come to America, I'm not on vacation. I'm certainly not there to pay the road crew and the band to have days off. This is a recession. We've got to keep everybody busy and working. So we tend to try and minimize time away from home in order that we can spend more time with our families, or indeed our dogs and cats and chickens and ducks and whatever else we might have to look after. And so I try and make it as efficient as I can, and try and be away from home really a few days. So we play pretty much every day when we're on the road, and we're not there to travel all that way just to take a day off and fool around. Much as it would be nice as a tourist to see many parts of America that I've passed through only on a working visit, I think it'd be better to do that as a genuine tourist and just go there and really enjoy it, rather than try to combine the two, which doesn't really work for me.
I'm a
Scotsman.
Really...
I'm much too mean. I'm much too mean-spirited and tight-sporran to want to pay my road crew to take days off.
Well, and it really does look like Ian, for our listeners, has a very packed schedule. And he, like we said, October 13th in New York, he's going to be at the Beacon Theater. And he's actually going to be in the metro area for most of October. So definitely you can catch him there, and he'll be on the West Coast as well.
That's right. Well, you can see exactly what's going on if you go to www.jethrotull.com. Tour dates are all there from next weekend on through till Christmas. So you'll see exactly what's going on. And actually, we still have a few more dates to be announced in December in Germany and the Czech Republic, but that's probably a little far from the Bronx.
We got trains here, so I'm sure it'll be no problem at all. Hey, listen,
very good.
Ian, shall we end with Bungle in the Jungle?
Why not? That sounds like a fitting end to an interview on the topics of all the animals we didn't get to talk about. But we'll do that. At least it starts off with a lion-like roar, which is certainly not the noise my little pussy cats make. But watch out, Roy. Here comes Bungle in the Jungle.
Thank you. walking through forests of palm tree apartments. Scoff at the monkeys who live in their dark tents. Down by the water hole, drunk every Friday, eating their nuts, saving their raisins for Sunday. Lions and tigers who wait in the shadows, they're fast but they're lazy, and sleep in green meadows. Well, that's bongo in the jungle. Well, that's all right by me, yes. Well, I'm a tiger when I want love, but I'm a snake if we disagree. Just say a word and the boys will be right there with claws at your back to send a chill through the night. Is it so frightening to have me at your shoulder? Thunder and lightning couldn't be bolder. I'll write on your tombstone, I thank you for dinner. This game that we animals play is the winner. Well, let's bungle in the jungle. Well, that's all right by me. Yes, I'm a tiger. Snakes in the grass. He's a lover of life, but a player of pawns. Yes, the king on a sunset lies waiting for dawn to light up his jungle as players resume. The monkeys seem willing to strike up the tune. But let's bungle in the jungle.
On demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.